We're in the Genesis chapter 12. It's the 15th lesson. So we're just moving right along. And we're in Genesis chapter 12. And if you remember last week, that's where the Lord approaches Abram. And we saw in chapter 11 where Abram's father, Terah, took Abram and Sarai and Lot, and they left Ur in the land of the Chaldees. You see that in verse 31, and headed out, and kind of like the Beverly Hillbillies, they headed toward California. So Terah dies. That's Abram's daddy, and after that, according to Stephen in Acts chapter 8, Abram departs Haran, which is a city in southern Turkey or northern Syria, and departs for Canaan, which is, of course, the land which God promised to Abram. And so we pick up the story here in Genesis chapter 12, verse 4. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. Of course, Lot being the nephew of Abram. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran. And they went forth to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. So, they finally made it. Now, one of the things that is interesting about Abram and many of the people in the Bible is we often think about those folks and we read about them. Of course, Abram takes up quite a bit of space in the book of Genesis. All the adventures and travels that that Moses dedicates to Abraham and of course his immediate offspring. You know, you read about these people and you think, wow, God talks to them and even appears to them, and you think, what incredible people these must have been, that God would have picked them out of the crowd and said, you know, Abraham, I'm going to make you a great man and give you all this land and to your seed, you know, all this inheritance you know, and you know, God's never appeared to me. You know, I've prayed, and He's never spoken to me. And you think, wow, how pitiful I must be in comparison to Abraham and Moses, and you know, who God talked to and appeared to, and all these things. You know, so you think of these people as people of perfect character. And one of the lessons we learn as you read the Bible is that the opposite really is quite true. And one of the things you have to keep in mind as we read about Abraham and all these folks in the Bible is that God really does use very ordinary people for quite extraordinary purposes.
Look at all the things He's done for us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We didn't have this book, we'd be totally ignorant.
That's exactly right. And you know, as James says in James chapter 5, verse 17 and 18, that you know, and he talks about the ordinariness, if that's even a word, of men. And he uses Elias as an example in his writings. James says, Elias was a man subject to passions as we are. In other words, Elias was a man just like you and I. You know, with the same wants, the same desires, the same thoughts, the same sins, the same, you know, the same fallacies, the same problems. You know, he put his pants on one leg at a time, got up in the morning, went to sleep at night, you know, and he wasn't perfect either. And yet, he goes on to say, and he prayed earnestly that it might not rain, and it rained not on the earth by the space of 3 years and 6 months. He prayed again, and the heaven gave rain, and the earth brought forth her fruit. You know, so a man of a very imperfect character who God worked through was able to was able to do extraordinary things because God used that man. So, you know, God isn't necessarily looking for extraordinary people to do extraordinary things. He uses very ordinary people. And here you have Abram. You know, when, back in chapter 11, we find out that God first talked to Abram and approached Abram, said, you know, pack up your stuff and get out of this town, Ur, and go to Canaan, and get away from your family, leave your family, leave your father, you know, and get away from all these people, and go to this land that I am going to show you. And oh, did Abram say, thank you, Lord, and immediately drop everything and grab his wife and take off from there and head toward Canaan? Absolutely not. You know, as we back up just a little bit, we find out in verse 31 of chapter 11, it was his daddy, Terah, took Abram and his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarah, his daughter-in-law, and his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan. And so it took his daddy to, in God moving his dad, you know, it wasn't Abram who's, you know, initially instigated the move. God said, Abram, you do this. But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't Abram who said, you know, I think that would be a good idea. Rather, it was God who instigated the move through his father, Terah. I don't know what the whole situation was, whether there was persecution going on or Terah, you know, decided to change professions or, you know, things look better over there on the other side of the hill. I don't know, you know, how God moved the family to get, you know, move from Ur to Haran. And initially they were on their way to Canaan and never made it. They got to Haran, look at the rest of the verse, and they came unto Haran and dwelt there. So, you know, it's like, you know, like I said, I talked about the Beverly Hillbillies, you know, jet get away from there, and they, you know, headed toward California. You know, they got as far as Utah and said, you know what, it looks pretty good here. Let's just park the truck and you know, pitch a tent. And that's as far as, you know, that's as far as they got. And who knows how many years they lived there, frankly. But it wasn't until Abram's father died until Abraham finally said, okay, I guess it's time to move on and obey God. So, Abraham did move by faith. You know, in Hebrews chapter 11, let me turn there for a moment to Hebrews chapter 11. You know, that's what's called the faith chapter in the Bible. And in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8, you know, when you compare what goes on in the book of Genesis to the faith chapter and the author of Hebrews, of course, being a chapter about faith, now the author of Hebrews is not going to point out the fact that Abraham moved by faith, but it took a kick in the rear by God. Rather, the author of Hebrews says in verse 8, by faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles. And so, you know, and the author of Hebrews, you know, makes it sound like, well, he just dropped everything and went. Well, that wasn't the fact at all. I mean, he dilly-dallied, he delayed, his daddy had to move him first, and then they didn't make it as far as they were supposed to go. God had to really kick him in the rear end in order to get him to move. So he needed pressure to obey. And he's not the only one. He's not the only one. Turn to the book of Exodus. Turn to the book of Exodus. If you've ever felt before like... And I've had these feelings in my own life. It's like you know, I wonder if God's ever displeased with you know, what I'm doing. Or, you know, I should be doing so much more than I'm doing for the Lord. You know, things like that. Or you know I could be doing more for the Lord than I'm doing. But, you know, I'm tired. I'm not motivated. I've got so many other things to do. I've got so many other pressures and, you know, a wife and a job and kids and grandkids. And, you know, you've got 100 different, you're pulled 100 different ways. And by the end of the day, you think, I could have, but I didn't. Well, maybe tomorrow. But then tomorrow comes and the same thing over, you know, again. And by the end of the week, you think, well, maybe next week. And then next week passes, and next month passes, and next year passes. And you look back and you think, Lord, all the things I could have done, but I didn't do. And, you know, I'm nothing like Abraham. I'm nothing like Moses. I'm nothing like any of these people in the Bible who did all these wonderful things by faith. But the fact of the matter is, look at Moses here. Look at Exodus chapter 3. You know, God comes to Moses. And, you know, of course, he was 40 years old when he found out that he was an Egyptian, and he left Egypt. And then he's 80 years old when God says, hey, Moses, come on up there on the mountain. I got to talk to you. In Exodus chapter 3, the Lord, verse 7 says, and the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of the people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters. For I know their sorrows, and I'm come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of the land into a good land, and a large, into a land flowing with milk and honey. And the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come unto me, and I have seen the oppression where the Egyptians oppressed them. Of course, you know, Moses is familiar with all this. He came from there. And God says, come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. I mean, wouldn't you be honored to be the one chosen of God for such a noble cause after you'd spent the first 40 years of your life, you know, witnessing the oppression of the people under the hand of Pharaoh? And here's Moses. And Moses said unto God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? Who am I? You know, that's the great faith that Moses had after 80 years. Who am I, Lord? You know, what are you picking me for? Look at chapter 4, verse 1. You know, God goes on and gives Moses all his plans that he's going to do. And Moses answered and said, but behold, they won't believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto thee. So he's arguing with the Lord. He's arguing with God. I mean, he's standing face to face with God. And he's saying, they're not going to believe me. And so here, you know, God says, well, this is what I'm going to do. This is my big plan. And this is Moses' retort. Verse 10, chapter 4, verse 10. Moses says unto the Lord, O my Lord, I'm not eloquent, neither heretofore nor since thou hast spoken unto me thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of slow tongue. And the Lord said unto him, who hath made man's mouth, or who maketh the dumb, or deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now go, now therefore go, and I will be with thy mouth, and teach thee what thou shalt say. And he said, and Moses, you know, he still wants to argue. He says, O my Lord, send, I pray thee, be the hand of him, who wilt thou send? And God gets mad at him. I mean, you know, after all this, God is starting to really get peeved at Moses. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. And you can understand God at this point. It's like, you know, let me pound it into your head. I'm going to send you. I don't care what you say, Moses. I'm going to send you. These men are not perfect. Just neither are we. And God can use us the same as He used them. So every time I think these things, and every time, you know, anybody thinks, how can God use us as imperfect as we are? You know, we put things off, we procrastinate, we say the wrong things, we do the wrong things, you know, we're wretched sinners. Abraham was too. Moses was too. They had every reason not to do what God wanted them to do, and they tried vehemently not to do what God told them directly to do, and yet they still got the job done. Back to Abraham. He does finally travel into the land of Canaan. Genesis chapter 12, verse 6. And Abraham passed through the land into the place of Sichem, unto the plain of Moreh, and the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. So not only did the Lord appear unto Abraham and tell him, I'm going to give you all this land, Abraham builded an altar there unto the Lord. Now, I'll comment on what's going on here in a minute, and to the implications, the importance of what Moses is saying about what Abraham does. I know it just seems like dry comments, but it really is important what Moses is saying here about what Abraham has done. Abraham then moves on south. Sichem, by the way, is in the northern West Bank, a place right now which is occupied by the Palestinians. So it's north of north and west of Israel, the country of Israel. And from there he moves to Bethel, which is just north of Jerusalem in the country of the modern Israel proper. And verse 8, he removed from thence unto a mountain on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west and Hai on the east. And there he builded an altar unto the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. So there's the second altar that he built. And then he continues to move south. So what he's done thus far is begun at the Persian Gulf, the tip of the Persian Gulf, moved up the Euphrates River, up to the southern tip of Turkey, northern top of Syria, and then come down, which is the fertile plain, along the Mediterranean Sea, and into down through Syria, Jordan, and into Israel as the modern country of Israel, and then continued south, and he continues moving south. And so if you can imagine that journey there in your mind, it sort of makes this type of shape. And Abram journeyed, verse 9, going on still toward the south. Now, there becomes a famine in the land. Now, remember, Abraham was 75, and Sarah at this time is 67, which is kind of amazing when you think about this, what goes on next. But there was a famine, verse 10, in the land. And Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. Now, when you think about this, what is the first problem with what Abraham did? God has promised the land that he is already in to him. And the first thing he does, as soon as there's a problem, as soon as there's a bit of difficulty, is he heads for safety. He heads for what he deems to be safety, but of course he goes to the land of Egypt. Every time in the Bible, the land of Egypt is always synonymous with evil, with always going to heading into a place of evil. And this is not going to be any different. You're always headed for trouble if you go into Egypt. And this is going to be the same type of thing. And another thing that you're going to notice about what happens here is this is going to very, very much parallel the story of Joseph and also his brothers, because there's going to be a famine. With Joseph's brothers, there was a famine. They went into Egypt, and there they stayed, though, until finally they were taken out of Egypt by God and led out by Moses. So you'll see some great parallels in the story and some lessons that should have been learned both by the descendants of Abraham and also Pharaoh. Ramesses, which was the Pharaoh at the time of the Exodus of all the descendants of Abraham, the children of Israel during the time of the Exodus. You know, we think about why did God harden the heart of Pharaoh the many times during the 10 plagues. You know, each time he hardened the heart of Pharaoh so that he would not let the children of Israel leave. Well, you'll see that he had historical reason to believe that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob was the true God. He should have known and learned from history and realized who he was dealing with long before it got to that point. So there's a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. So that's the mistake that Abram makes, and it's just going to get worse from there. And it came to pass, when he was come near to enter into Egypt, that he said unto Sarai, his wife, you know what? I don't think these are a lot of Bible believers that we're going to deal with here in Egypt. And I think my life might be in danger, because you're a pretty good looking woman, and they might want to kill me to have you. So here's the plan. He says, behold now, I know that thou art a fair woman to look upon, even 67 years old apparently. And he says, verse 12, therefore it shall come to pass, when the Egyptians shall see thee, that they shall say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will save thee alive. Say, I pray thee, thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee.
Not because of God, but because of his wife.
Yeah, well, let's trust in, let's hide behind my wife. Let's not trust in God, who has promised that. Wait a minute, what was it that we just got promised by God? The Lord appeared unto Abraham just in Shechem and said unto him, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there he built an altar unto the Lord. And in just a matter of, I don't know, weeks, a couple months, however long it took him to get from there to Bethel and then keep journeying south into Egypt, his faith completely collapsed.
He had 9 months anyway before the first one was shot.
Yeah, and his faith completely collapsed, and he said, "You know what? I know I just saw God not too long ago, and He said that that my seed is going to inherit all this, but you know what? I didn't count on this famine thing. I thought everything was going to be completely easy, and life was going to be a bed of roses." Once I saw God, I thought that it was going to be downhill sledding all the way. Well, the Christian life, as you know, is not just downhill sledding all the way, but God does test our faith. And the first test of faith that Abraham gets tested with, he does not pass with flying colors, as you can see. Matter of fact, he hides behind his wife. Well, God comes to the rescue, because Abraham's plan works, but his worst fears are realized. It backfires on him. It came to pass, verse 14, that when Abram was come into Egypt, the Egyptian beheld the woman, that she was very fair. But what Abraham did not count on was that Pharaoh would want her. And the princes also of Pharaoh saw her and commended her before Pharaoh. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And he entreated Abraham well for her sake. In other words, because she said, "Oh, he's my brother." Well, Pharaoh said, "As your brother, I'm going to endow you with all kinds of gifts because I want this woman for my wife." Can you imagine if your wife was living in the house of Pharaoh, separated from you, and you didn't have a clue what was going on? And you had been endowed with, as the verse says, he had sheep and oxen, and he asses and men servants and maid servants and she asses and camels, all given to him by Pharaoh in exchange for his wife Sarai, who was pretending to be his sister. I suppose that night after night, he would lay down and wonder what in the world was going on and how it was all going to turn out. Well, God does come to the rescue. In His grace, because He had promised Abraham that He would in fact be the father of the seed that would inherit the land, and God is not a man that He should lie, He sends plagues on Pharaoh in order to get Sarai released. Verse 17, the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abraham's wife. Now you see the parallel between what goes on here and what is yet to go on in when Moses goes to Pharaoh to get the Israelites released from their captivity in the book of Exodus. But it's quite a different outcome here than it is sometime later on down the line. It doesn't take long to convince this Pharaoh that he should get rid of Sarai. Apparently, Sarai must have confessed that she was actually married to Abram, because in verse 18, Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this that thou hast done unto me? Why didst thou not tell me that she was thy wife? Why saidest thou, she is my sister, so I might have taken her to me to wife? Now therefore, behold thy wife, take her, and go thy way. In other words, the plagues, he knew something was going on. And he knew they were coming from God. And Sarai told Pharaoh, I'm married to not my brother, but rather to Abram, my husband. And Pharaoh realized that Abram's God was responsible for the plagues and corrected the situation immediately. And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away, and his wife, and all that he had. So what happens is, Abram leaves the same way that the children of Israel did in the Exodus. If you remember, when the children of Israel left, they left with everything that the Egyptians had. They took the gold, they took the silver, they took all the riches, they took all the cattle, they took everything. Because the Egyptian says, here, you take it, get out. And they did. And that's exactly what happens here. Pharaoh says, he gave Abram all this stuff. He didn't want it back. He says, whatever I've given you, take it and get out. So there's quite a bit of parallel between the two stories. This should have been a lesson for Ramesses when Moses showed up. He should have known long before who he was dealing with. And that's why God hardened his heart. So, Abraham learned, or should have learned, a tremendous lesson about who to trust, himself or God, in this little misadventure of his. First of all, he should never have journeyed into Egypt. He should have trusted God and stayed where he was supposed to stay, back in the land of Canaan. Having gone into Egypt, he should have not lied about who his wife was, but he should have trusted God for his safety. But he took it upon himself to disguise himself. God had to get him out of trouble. Even so, God is still faithful, even though oftentimes we're not. So, there's a lot of lessons to be learned from Abraham's adventures and even his misadventures. Now, one of the interesting things about the travels of Abram is as he moved from Ur up to Haran, and then over to, from Ur up to Haran along the Euphrates River, down to Canaan, and then to Sichem, to Bethel, and then over to Zoar, which is in Egypt, out of Zoar, and then he's going to come back into Bethel, and you'll see that in the next chapter. The journeys of Abraham very much outline the land which is promised to Israel. In Genesis chapter 15, verse 18, the covenant that God makes with Abraham really isn't given until we get into later in Genesis, in chapter 15. But in that verse, in the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt, unto that of course be the Nile, unto the great river, the river Euphrates. So you have a great deal of land there. Also in Joshua chapter 1, verses 3 and 4, every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. Now, of course, this being spoken to Joshua as they entered into the land of Canaan from the wilderness, and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea, toward the going down of the sun, that of course in the west, in the east, shall be, she rises in the east, sets in the west, there you go, to the west shall be your coast. So, from the Euphrates all the way over to the Mediterranean. So, if you look on a map, it's not hard to figure out. So, from the Euphrates River starts at the where Ur was at the top of the. My mind is as sharp as a razor blade. oh goodness gracious! At the south end of the Euphrates, all the way up to Turkey, down to the northern part of Egypt, and if you draw a line pretty much across, but the land that Israel, the modern day Israel, now inhabits, is just a fraction of what has been promised to the people of Israel. Meanwhile, you look at, if you have your Bible open to Genesis, when Abraham was making his journeys, Moses mentioned that as Abraham passed into Sichem, and there he built an altar. As he came into Bethel, he also built an altar. Jacob, on his way back, if you remember, I talked about Jacob and his meeting his brother again after being estranged from him. But he, on his way back, he also retraced the steps of his granddaddy, Abraham. He also stopped at Shechem. Turn to chapter 33, Genesis 33, verse 18 through 20, and you can see, and Jacob came to Shechem, a city at Shechem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. Where he came from Padan Aram, and Padan Aram was where he had been staying, and did stay with his uncle for so long. And he pitched his tent before the city, and he brought a parcel of field where he spread his tent, the land of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. And he erected there an altar, and he called it Elohi Israel. So he also erected an altar in the very same place. A couple chapters later, in chapter 35, verse 1, and God said unto Jacob, arise, go to Bethel, and dwell there, and make there an altar unto God that appeared unto thee, where thou fleddest from the face of Esau, thy brother. So God appeared at Bethel to Jacob the same way he appeared at Bethel to Abraham. In verse 17, when he got to Bethel, Jacob built there an altar, and he called the place El Bethel, because there God appeared to him when he fled from the face of his brother. So he called the place El Bethel. Well, when you get farther into the Bible and the entering into the land by the Israelites, in Joshua chapter 8, the names of the cities get changed a little bit. You have to keep in mind that it was called El Bethel. And in chapter 8, verse 9, those two cities, Shechem and Bethel, were two of the first cities to be conquered by the Israelites. Once they entered in, they were two key cities captured. And lo and behold, what happens? Joshua therefore sent them forth, and they went to lie in ambush in a boat between Bethel and Ai in the west side of Ai. But Joshua lodged that night amongst the people. And in verse 30, let me find verse 30. Then Joshua built an altar unto the Lord God of Israel in Mount Ebal, which that is Bethel. Remember, the name got changed, and then it's just shortened to Mount Ebal instead of Ebethel. So he builds an altar unto the Lord in the same place where God appeared to Abraham and Jacob. These are extremely important places. Extremely important places. And their remembrance is kept throughout the book of Genesis, and as the Israelites enter into the land. So it's a significant place, and Moses points out that, you know, that it's the significance by the building of an altar by God's appearance there. So I just wanted to point that out to you, that, you know, that appearance, that significance appears numerous times throughout the Bible. Genesis chapter 13. So Pharaoh kicks out Abraham. And Abram went up out of Egypt. So he's leaving, he has to go east and then north. Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. So Abram leaves a very rich man. And verse 3, he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been in the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, into the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot had been with him, and he also, because of all the his journeys with Abram, was a very wealthy man. Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents, and the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. Now Abram must have learned a few things in his dealings through Egypt and through time, and he uses a little bit of grace in his dealing with Lot, and decides that they need to split up. And rather than dictating which way Lot should go, he gives Lot his choice of land. And tells Lot, look around and you decide which way you want to go, and whichever way you want to go is fine with me. Now, the major reason was to keep the peace. Because, verse 7, there was a strife between the herdsmen of Abram's cattle and the herdsmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite, the Pezerite, dwelled then in the land. So there were other people also dwelling in the same vicinity. Now the other people, of course, were pagan in their nature. They were not believers. And of course, Abraham was busy building altars unto God. That would have, of necessity, been at least a curiosity unto the other pagan worshipers. At worst, it would have been an offense to them. So, the Canaanites and the Pezerites may have at times been a little less than hospitable, but at best, not friendly anyway. And Abram said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdsmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. So at least the two of us need to get along. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I go to the left. Now the easiest solution, there's a river that divides the land. The easiest solution will be one to go to the one side of the river, and the other will go to the other side of the river. Would have made sense. But Lot makes a rather selfish decision. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves, the one from the other. Now it's interesting that Moses puts in verse 10 that the plain of Jordan was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, and that it was, it really looked like the Garden of Eden, that it was so well watered it looked like the Garden of Eden before God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Really, what Moses is saying is, we haven't even gotten to Sodom and Gomorrah yet, but the fact of the matter is, what Moses is saying is, things that look really good often aren't as good as they look. The things that look the most tempting to us often look that way, but aren't the best choices for us. So we need to know what we're getting into before we make our decisions. We shouldn't make our decisions based on appearance only. And Lot looked around and said, there's the best grass right there. There's the best plain. There's the most watered, the greenest, the luscious. And besides that, as we're going to find out, it was the best economic decision. Because also in that direction were the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. Look at verse 12. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. So, while Lot didn't necessarily originally, and may not have intended to live in Sodom, it says he dwelled in the cities of the plain. He may not have intended to go into Sodom. That's where he ended up. He might have looked down at the plain and said, not only is it the luscious, greenest pasture for my herds, but economically, it's the best decision. Because there's a built-in market for my produce, you know, for the milk, for the meat, for all my goods, for the skins. This is a great financial disaster, or great financial decision. But it's going to end up being a spiritual disaster. And of course, he's going to end up losing his wife in the end. So, again, things that look the best often turn out to be the worst. Abram, on the other hand, got the short end of the stick. He got the plains of Jordan, or not the plain of Jordan, he got the land of Canaan, which was a lot drier, harder to herd cattle, his sheep and cattle in, much tougher pasture. And so economically, not a great decision, but he graciously took that which Lot did not. Lot should have known that the men of Sodom were not going to be good men. God had commanded Abram to get away from those men of Ur, and the men of Sodom were going to be much like those same men. So what Lot was choosing to do was to move back into the city life that God had commanded Abram to get away from. So the men of Sodom, verse 13, were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. And Lot was consciously choosing to move back into that same atmosphere. And generally what you choose to do consciously and the atmosphere and things that you put yourself amongst, you're going to reap the rewards of that same thing. Well, having gotten the short end of the stick, God's promise then is reiterated to Abraham to reassure him. We read in Genesis 13:14, "The Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art, northward, southward, and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee." And rather than complain about what he had been given because Lot had taken the best portion, Abraham's response, "Then Abraham removed his tent, and he came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre," which is in Hebron, a rather dry place, and not really the best suited for all the things that Abram had, and all his herds and his cattle. But he did with what he was given, and he built there an altar unto the Lord. So he praised God for his promise, and he praised God for what he had. So rather than seeking financial gain, as Lot was doing, Abram was satisfied then with the promise of God. As Paul says in Timothy chapter 6, "Godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out. Having food and raiment, let us be therewith content." Lot, on the other hand, being tempted with financial gain, went for the lush grounds and the cities. Paul also says in 1 Timothy chapter 6, that they which will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which, while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith, and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. And many sorrows Lot will see before his story is done. You know, both men, when they came out of Egypt, were very wealthy, and their wealth continued to grow. But the two men, Abram and Lot, took very different roads after they went their separate ways. Paul says, "Charge them which are rich in this world, that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who giveth us richly in all things to enjoy. Abram did just that. Lot, seems, decided to trust in his own riches and go after financial gain. So we'll have to wait and see how that turns out exactly for him in the coming chapters.